Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Thank you as always for being here, and apologies for the lateness of the podcast this week. Normally we have something for you on a Friday morning, but various things have happened and transpired and have been going on around here, which made that basically impossible. One, like the time of the Europa League game yesterday, 5:45 kickoff. It's not always easy to find somebody who's available to chat after the game, and plus there was other post-game stuff. I was also supposed to be having some work done around the house today, so I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to record first thing in the morning or not. As it turns out, that was cancelled at the last minute. But the main thing was that yesterday, Lana, my four-year-old German Shepherd, came back from the vets, having just had a hip replacement surgery on Tuesday, and she required, and still requires obviously, quite a lot of care and attention and looking after. But she came back yesterday and she was absolutely 100% zonked on painkillers, the trauma of the surgery. She was sad and sore and all that kind of stuff. So it has taken a little while for her to sort of settle back in at home and start having a little bite to eat and everything else. So she is hopefully going to get better and better and brighter every day. And thank you to everybody who's been in touch to ask about her and everything else. It's much appreciated. But all of that was going on, which made it difficult for me to get a podcast out before now. But here we are, so let's do it. Europa League action and more, and with me to talk about all that is Lewis Ambrose. Hi, Lewis.
Hello, Andrew. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. How's it going?
It's going all right, thanks. You?
Yeah, I think it's going fine. At least from a footballing perspective, Arsenal have got the Europa League campaign off to a winning start, a 2-1 win over FC Zurich last night in St. Gallen. In Switzerland rather than Zurich itself. And I guess that will form the first part of our conversation today. It's nice to have European football back. You know, I think you could look at this game. Nobody's going to look at this game and say, it was an absolute classic. This is what European football is all about. Nobody is going to say that about this particular game. But it is nice to sort of get into that, well, we thought we were going to get into that Thursday-Sunday rhythm, which is probably going to be delayed for reasons which we'll touch on a bit later on, of course. But just having European football back, that sort of change of team, that change of scenery, that sense, I don't know if you get this, but there's always a sort of like a sense with European football that it's happening somewhere else, even if it's happening at the Emirates, kind of, which is a bit weird. But you know what I mean? There's something a little bit different about it. And, you know, you get that with the team selection and everything else. So nice to have it back.
Yeah, like you say, with the lineup especially, but you do definitely, and it's like these two parts of it as well, because you've got the knockout rounds, which are tense, and you know that any mistake or slip up could be really costly. And then you obviously get the group stages, and especially the very beginning of the group stages, where I think yesterday we were in complete control of the game, and then obviously gave a penalty away, and it's never nice to give a penalty away or concede a goal, but you could also very easily, or much more easily than most games, take it on the chin. And even if the game in Switzerland had gone horribly, you knew that we had five games to make up for it. So in a weird way, I guess that tension isn't quite there in the same way. You obviously see that with the team selection as well. And I think, especially when it's so close to the summer still, and we've signed a few players that we've not had the chance to watch yet.
Yeah.
Fabio Vieira, especially, because he was missing for all the preseason. It's nice to be able to watch those players and see, start to get a bit of an idea of what they can bring to the team and how can they be of use to us throughout the season. So they'll have much tougher games than against FC Zurich, but it was good to get off to a good start and see some not so familiar faces.
Well, that's true. And look, there were some players playing their first game for the club last night. Matt Turner in goal, Marquinhos starting on the right wing. There were some players starting their first game of the season as well. Rob Holding, Takahiro Tomiyasu, Fabio Vieira, Eddie Nketiah starting their first game. So, you know, these group stages are important. And I was trying to figure out the team beforehand. You know, I was trying to figure out, like, who's going to play where, because we've had those injuries in midfield, because we didn't add further to the squad before the end of the transfer window. You're kind of thinking, well, what is the 11 rotation that you can make? And it was very difficult to make 11 changes because we just didn't have that depth and don't have that depth. So we did see some players like Granit Xhaka, Gabriel Martinelli also start, who, you know, ordinarily you might think, okay, we've got to give these guys a bit of a rest, but they weren't lucky enough to get that going into this game. So let's go through the people we haven't seen too much before, but we'll do it sort of back to front. There was an early scare, self-inflicted scare as well, when Matt Turner played a pass that he really shouldn't have played. And, you know, when he did it, what went through my mind was, you know, when he signed, people were saying, this guy's a very good shot stopper, but maybe with the ball at his feet, he doesn't quite fit what Arsenal want to do. And he spoke about that himself, and he admitted this is something that he's going to have to work on. He's going to work really hard on. And I just wonder if, in that particular circumstance, did he think, right, here it is. This is like my first moment. Do I make a pass?
Can't just hoof it.
Yeah, you know, do I just boot it up the pitch? And I think the answer to that question was, yes, you should just boot it up the pitch when there's two attackers in front of you, and like a slide rule pass that if Dennis Bergkamp had made between those two attackers, people would go, ooh, that was a good pass, a bit risky, but a good pass. He made the wrong decision. We got away with that. And then from the resulting corner, there was a little bit of a flap at that. So it was an unconvincing start from Matt Turner, but I do think he grew into the game more solidly as it went on. He didn't have a huge amount to do, but a couple of times when he needed to show safe hands, he did that.
Yeah, he wasn't, like you say, he wasn't too busy. There were that moment, you just wonder as well, we've kind of been spoiled a little bit watching Aaron Ramsdale, and you cast your mind back a few years to Petr Cech being in goal, and it seems like that you're covering your face now as I say that. I can see scenes like that were kind of a weekly occurrence where Cech would fumble with the ball a little bit at his feet. So yeah, there are goalkeepers who are good at it, and there are goalkeepers who aren't as good at it. Aaron Ramsdale is very good at it. And you saw Old Trafford on Sunday, for example, really good on both feet too.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what angle the ball comes to him. He can, you know, sort of clip that pass out to the left back or the right back, whichever foot it's on. I thought that was that situation with Turner that you're talking about. It was a little bit uncomfortable, and maybe would have been more comfortable to use his weaker left foot. But he obviously wanted to try and take it on his right foot, so his his body shape was all closed off to getting the ball upfield because he was taking it on his right foot. Yeah, those things will come, and I don't know to what extent they can come at that age. It's certainly not to the extent that Aaron Ramsdale can play with the ball at his feet, but you'd hope that training every day he'll only improve, and being in those situations, he'll learn when to do it, when not to do it. Some of the passing was okay.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the game, when FC Zurich obviously launched a few balls forward towards the end, trying to get in behind, look for that equaliser. I thought he was quite proactive coming off his line as well, and collecting a couple of balls that, if he'd have stayed on his line, could have turned into shots. So, as you say, there wasn't too much for him to do, but we did have to do generally. He was fine, and no Alex Runesson clangers for the goal either. It's a penalty. He's gone the wrong way. It happens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Can't really blame a goalkeeper for that. I did see a few people tweeting Turnerson after those first couple of minutes, which might be a little bit harsh. But look, you know, he's got his debut under his belt. You know, in terms of his passing, he attempted 17 long balls and was accurate with 9 of them, which stacks up against Aaron Ramsdale against Manchester United, who attempted 22 long balls and played 11 accurate long balls. So, you know, it's not bad in that sense. I do think it's about picking your moments when you're trying to play out from the back, is knowing, like, am I capable of doing this? Like, when
control under pressure.
Exactly.
As well.
Exactly. And I really do think that part of that was like, this is my debut. this is the first pass I've got to make with Arsenal playing out from the back. I'm going to show that I can do it. And, you know.
He didn't.
He didn't. And look, thankfully we got away with it. And I do think that, you know, as they work on that aspect of his game with him, you know, it's not even so much about the technical execution of it. It's about the decision-making, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, for sure. And I think that's something we even talked about maybe last year or the year before with Bernd Leno. It never felt like a huge issue that Bernd Leno couldn't play with the ball at his feet. But just that, not even the decision-making, I wouldn't say, but the time that he took to make some of those decisions sometimes put himself or put defenders under pressure when the ball did then arrive at them. Maybe he'd taken a couple of seconds or a second and a half longer than Ramsdale would to pop that pass off. And I hope that all will come in good time. And I think we know that the way that Arsenal want to play, and you saw bits of it in the All or Nothing documentary as well, they'll be sat there going through all of those passes, and every time he got the ball at his feet, and they'll be showing examples of maybe Ramsdale or someone else of what they'd like him to do and what he did do, and they'll be working on those things with him. He'll only get better at it.
Just before we move on, speaking of long balls, Takehiro Tomiyasu, 6 out of 6. Some of them with his left foot as well. You know, I know this is a guy who really impressed people in the first half of last season when he came in and did really well, and injuries really affected the second half of the season for him. But, you know, they've eased him back in this season, and it will be quite interesting to see, you know, what way we line up, you know, over the coming weeks and months as the fixtures become more condensed. I thought he was very good, sort of underrated, not underrated, but not somebody anybody talked about on the night, but I just think as a performance, his first start of the season, I thought it was really, really solid.
He's just so clean technically. You never worry that he's going to fumble and give the ball away in a dangerous position and get caught and on the turn or anything like that. It's great as well for us, for Mikel Arteta, to have started the season the way we have with Ben White playing there. And now we've got options in multiple positions. You look at that back line and you think, we've got three starting level centre-backs. You've got three centre-backs that you can pick any two of them on any given weekend and you wouldn't expect too many problems. You'd have faith in the two, whichever two are picked, to deliver.
Yeah.
And the same at right-back, the way that Ben White started the season. You can play him or Tomiyasu. You've got options now. And it's really, really nice after last season. We've talked so much about last season, one injury away in probably more than half the positions on the pitch. We were one injury away from panic and disaster. And now at right back and at centre back with Ben White's versatility, you've got players who can come in. And Tomiyasu maybe, you know, as a possible option at left back as well. It's reassuring to have those options and those backups and that level of rotation. Even if you think the squad isn't maybe quite as big as it could be, when you've got a player like Ben White who can then play well in a couple of different positions, it just adds so much. And you can play him at centre back and play Tomiyasu. You can leave Ben White out and play Tomiyasu with Saliba and Gabriel next to him. So it will be interesting. I don't know if a first choice pair or a first choice back four will be obvious by the end of the season, but or if we'll be in a position where it's just general rotation game by game. It'll be interesting to see, but I also, yeah, people look for their, they have their favourites and the guys they maybe don't like so much. Right now, the two centre backs and at right back, I'm happy whoever of those four players take those three spots.
Yeah. I mean, when you talk about the squad, just looking at the bench, there were three academy guys on the bench, but I think it was quite obvious that the sort of, you know, the way in Europa League seasons in the past, we've had the likes of Reece Nelson, Joe Willock, Eddie Nketiah, Bukayo Saka to a certain extent, you know, who did break through under Emery. Players who are sort of there or thereabouts knocking on the door of the first team. And we don't necessarily have that for the group stages.
And it feels like those guys have been loaned out this summer, if there were any of them.
Yeah, I mean, Balogun is
Charlie Patino, Balogun, yeah. Amari Hutchinson, I guess, would have been one, but obviously left for Chelsea. So, yeah, those sorts of guys just aren't really there at the moment. And the young kids that we're going to see on the bench are probably going to only see any sort of minutes if we're 4-0 up in a game or something.
Yeah, Well, yeah, exactly. And if we, you know, if we have the group wrapped up, for example, ahead of the last game, maybe then you can give some of these guys a debut and a bit of a run out. But, you know, the bench was pretty, pretty strong because there isn't much depth in the squad as it stands. Fabio Vieira, £35 million signing, £35 million signing from Porto. I thought he had an interesting few minutes. I won't call it a cameo, Lewis. Don't worry. against Manchester United, but he got his first start of the season, and I think he was a little bit in and out of the game, but you can see that this is a player who's got real technical quality. He played in the Odegaard role. He flitted between the lines, you know, between the midfield and attack lines very well. He's got a good eye for a pass, as we saw for the goal, which I'm sure we'll come to. Made a great run forward. Could have scored a goal in the first half as well. And technically, as we're talking about that aspect of things, you know, looks very tidy on the ball. And, you know, when we think about where this squad is going to go, where this team is going to go, this is a guy who I can see contributing very well over the course of this season. Clearly needs a bit more time to settle. Hasn't really had a preseason, but he looks sharp. He looks quite quick over the ground as well in the first 5-10 yards, which I think will be really important.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think it's that's very, very much worth bearing in mind. That was the first game he'd have started since May, I guess, playing for Porto. Yeah. So he's gone quite a long time. As you say, no preseason. He's gone a long time without really playing football. And I thought, yeah, he did look pretty good in, when he came on at the end at Old Trafford on Sunday. And I thought, yeah, I think you're right. He flitted in and out, but when he flitted in, it was really, really good. And he's a player who's just very, very easy on the eyes, very, very good to watch. I think probably that you cast your mind back and that classic stereotype Arsenal playmaker from, what, just over 10 years ago, Hleb and Nasri, he would fit in with those sorts of players, that group of players that everyone thought we had way too many of, really, really nicely. I think technically just looks so smooth on the ball. And genuinely, I think it's a pleasure to watch. The not just the pass for the goal, but the feet to get himself away from a little bit of pressure. He collected the ball and he had a couple of Zurich players around him and managed to calmly move himself out of that position and then obviously find Nketiah in the channel. So, yeah, I think there's a lot to like about Fabio Vieira. And we've paid a lot of money for him, so you do sort of expect a return on that quite quickly. But he's young and he's not had the preseason. It's going to probably be a slow move into the team. Odegaard's captain as well, the guy he's competing for really most of the time for a position in the side. If not Odegaard, then you'd probably say Saka on the wing is the other position that he's most likely to play in. So he's not a player who we're going to see week in, week out and is going to fire us to the title or anything like that. But we're going to have to use him in these Europa League games and then we'll get a really good idea, I think, of how ready he is. And then maybe after World Cup and after Christmas, we might see a little bit more of him in the league, I suspect. Well, they've got him earmarked for these European games up until then.
Yeah, I mean, this is essentially his preseason, you know, and you think back to, you know, the guys who've hit the ground running this season, Gabriel Martinelli, Gabriel Jesus. Now, these guys have had their preseason. They've done the training. They've done the hard work on the training ground. They've played the matches, you know, in temperatures against decent opposition as well, which has really given them the sort of the readiness and the preparation to deliver in the Premier League right now. So I think people have to bear that in mind, that maybe we're going to see Fabio Vieira with Europa League starts and little cameos in the Premier League and what have you. But it might just take him some time to get to the rhythm, to get to the sort of match fitness and match sharpness that you need to be able to contribute at that level.
Yeah, which is fine as well.
Yeah.
It's, you know, especially the injury situation. We've all seen what happens over and over again if you rush a player back or rush them into minutes. And when you say this is his preseason, it's so condensed up until the middle of November when all the players go away for the World Cup as well. That it's a game a week essentially. If you throw in, I think, potentially a couple of League Cup games. Obviously, we've got Brighton in the third round of that. Who knows who'll be in charge of them now as well? It'll be Fabio Vieira will be playing all those Europa League games, I'm sure, and the League Cup as well. So we're talking the next 8 or 9 weeks. He could play 7 or 8 games. So it's not like last season when we weren't in Europe and you got to Christmas, we'd be knocked out of the cups by January, and Eddie Nketiah was sitting there like, well, when the hell is he going to get on the pitch then?
Yeah.
Fabio Vieira, if he stays fit, touch wood, is going to have 6 Europa League group games, a League Cup game minimum, and whatever minute you can use him in the league as well. So he's got time to ease himself in and then hopefully hit the ground running when domestic football restarts again after Christmas.
Yeah. One man who did have a special night, I think he's the guy who will remember this as a fantastic evening, even if most people will just say, well, FC Zurich 1, Arsenal 2, let's chalk it down to history and move on and get to the next one, is Marquinhos. And, you know, it's quite interesting, isn't it? Because here's a guy who we signed during the summer when Wolves were going to sign him before we hijacked that deal, much to their unhappiness. They were planning on loaning him out to Grasshoppers.
And they knew something. He was clearly going to rip the Swiss league apart.
He was ready for Swiss opposition, exactly. Had Arsenal, you know, let's say Thomas Partey and Mohamed Elneny had not got injured and Arsenal had brought in another winger before the end of the transfer window, it's quite possible that Marquinhos may not have even stayed at Arsenal for this season. He could have gone on loan.
Or if no suitor had been found for Nicolas Pepe as well.
Well, that's true also. That's true also. So sometimes it takes little things to go your way for you to get an opportunity in a team. And you could see very clearly how much that goal meant to him, like scoring on your debut. I mean, that's fucking great anyway. Like, fair play. Scoring on your debut is like a dream for any player when they start at a new club. But the reaction was very emotional. Like, I don't know his backstory to any great degree. Very often you hear stories of Brazilian footballers who've worked really, really hard to get themselves, you know, into a position where maybe they might get a move to Europe, and financially it's great for them. I don't know his backstory, but maybe based on the reaction, you know, this might be something that he has worked extremely hard for, and to mark his debut in, I was going to say in red and white, but in glorious black and gold, you know, it obviously meant a huge amount to him.
Yeah, and I think, I imagine as well, maybe the hard work is one aspect. Going through my mind was that this is a kid who knows this is his chance. Like, he's going to have a limited number of minutes this season to prove. And he only is getting those minutes, as you say, because A, we didn't sign a winger, B, Pepe left, and C, Bukayo Saka is unfortunately human, we think, and can't play every minute of every game. And I'm sure Marquinhos knows that they will be chasing some sort of option to play in those attacking positions in January. And he's got a few games here to really make a mark and show that he shouldn't go out on loan and he can be of value to Arsenal right now and maybe play in the Premier League at some point in the next couple of months. Mm-hmm. So I think that was, you know, he was obviously, we were looking for a goal on Sunday and a whole bunch of other guys were brought on and he was the one that, the attacking player on the bench who was overlooked, I think completely understandably. And now he's gone and had a really exciting debut. And obviously, as you say, scored the goal. I thought he took the goal really well.
Yeah.
His weak foot.
Yeah.
He just acted calm. He didn't hit the ball hard at all. He just picked his spot and guided it right into the corner.
Used the pace of the ball. Let the ball do the work, as they say.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It was really, really composed, calm finish. He didn't panic or rush. That was really refreshing to see. And generally, he looked busy and exciting, I think, throughout the game.
Yeah.
Some of those crosses were lovely. Martinelli nearly got on the end of one. Fabio Vieira, I think, early on, nearly got on the end of one as well.
Martinelli should have scored from one very early on.
It was a good chance.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was Fabio Vieira. There was one earlier that, right near the beginning, I don't know if it was Fabio Vieira or if it was Kieran Tierney, because there was a moment where a ball just evaded Kieran Tierney in the box and I just assumed it was Vieira and then they zoomed in and it was Tierney and you think, what the hell is he doing?
It was Kieran Tierney. That was a Vieira pass actually for Tierney.
All right. Yeah, true. But yeah, Marquinhos, a couple of really good balls. He the left back had a little bit of trouble, I think, in the first half, especially dealing with him, knocking the ball outside him and trying to get past him. He's also, when you sign a winger that age, you do expect, I think it was mentioned during pre-season on one of the Arsecasts, but you expect someone maybe a bit wiry who is going to take a bit of a kicking and have to get used to that. He's stocky, and I think that's going to suit him really, really well when it comes to adapting to the Premier League and getting used to playing football at this level. I don't think he's going to be pushed around too easily. So it was a nice, exciting debut, I think, and hopefully there's more of that to come. I mean, I'm trying to think of wingers who have come through at Arsenal before and looked ready at that age, and Oxlade-Chamberlain and Gnabry had that similar kind of build. I won't compare them as players, but they looked ready at 18 to play top-level football, and they did have that sort of rugby player chest, if you like. And Marquinhos has got a bit of that, so... Yeah, I think we'll see more of him. It happens now and then, doesn't it? A young player, and you don't really know if he's ever going to play this season or not. And then it turns out he becomes a lot more useful than anyone imagined during the season.
Yeah.
And after last night, I'm quite hopeful that, not that he's going to be starting 10, 15 Premier League games, but that he could be a useful player for us.
Yeah, I mean, he's a sturdy guy. Like, he's 19. He certainly doesn't look 19 in terms of his physique and how well developed he is. There were some, you know, pictures doing the rounds in preseason with the old tree trunk thighs, big muscly thighs. And everyone's like, holy shit, this guy's a unit, you know? But what I liked about his debut was, like, you know, the way... Like you say, sometimes you get a young winger and they're really, really keen to impress. And what that does is it has an impact on your decision-making when you've got the ball, right? So you try and do something spectacular so people will sit up and take notice and try and, you know, maybe take a risk in certain areas. And I thought his decision-making, for the most part, was really good. When he made space to put in crosses, they were good crosses, two with the left foot. The one I mentioned early on, which Martinelli should score. He doesn't get enough on the header. He should score from there. And then, of course, there's the assist for Eddie Nketiah as well. But there were other moments where that wasn't quite on. And he didn't just fling the ball into the middle for no good reason. He ended the game with four key passes. One goal, one assist, two shots. You know, and he came off at, 70 minutes, something like that. So it really was a very impressive debut. And I just wonder, you know, when you are a young player, like, and you do have your chance, and we've seen this countless times where they're desperate to make an impression. They want to show their quality. They want to show their talent, but often it comes at the expense of doing the right thing at the right moment. And it feels like a performance from a young guy who's listened to what the coaches and what the manager have said to him about how he should play. Like, they want him to contribute. They want him to score a goal. They want him to provide an assist, but also to be aware of when those moments come and to sort of take the right decision at the right time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, completely. And now I think the decision-making, like you say, is so many young players and that talent's obvious, but it is the decision-making that holds them back or proves that they're not quite ready.
Mm.
And if he's got that down, then we've got a player who can really add something immediately to the squad. It'll be interesting next week against PSV to see him. Obviously, we'll be at home, but a higher level of opposition, I think it's probably fair to say, that will be much more of a test and more of the sort of team that we might be playing, you know, at the Emirates, bottom half Premier League team or mid-table, that sort of level of opposition. I guess PSV would be something similar to. It would be nice to see what he can do in that game and how much of an impact he can have. Because if he looks good next week, then we've got a really, really useful squad player, hopefully, moving forward into, you know, the Premier League games that are coming up as well.
Yeah, sort of an unexpected one, because when we talked about you know, what was happening towards the end of the window, people will say, well, we've got this player, and we've got Marquinhos, but nobody knows what he can do. So it's sort of like, is it like a joker in the pack, if you like?
I don't think, if Reece Nelson was fit, especially, I don't think it would have been a surprise to anyone if Marquinhos had sort of got to January with two sub appearances and then got loaned out or something. So yeah, I think a joker in the pack's spot on is the right way to describe it, because it could hopefully come out of nowhere a little bit as a really viable option.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. And like, with all due respect to Reece Nelson, this is the kind of performance which sort of flips the situation a little bit, because you could say for something like last night, if Nelson was fit, you go, well, he's got some experience, played well for Feyenoord last season. He's maybe the safe option. But if you're thinking about building a team, if you're thinking about developing a player, again, with all due respect to Reece Nelson, why would Arsenal give Reece Nelson any development minutes right now, mm-hmm. rather than Marquinhos, who, you know, after one game, we're not jumping to any conclusions, but certainly you can see that those minutes going into a player who has a contract for 4 or 5 years would be more beneficial to the club than going into a player who is out of contract next summer and in all likelihood is going to leave.
Yeah, the Reece Nelson one's a weird one, obviously. It has been for a couple of years now. But I have no doubt he would have started last night, just based on seniority, if he was available. I'm pretty sure that Mikel Arteta probably would have gone that way, and not really knowing anything about Marquinhos. And it's just very, very nice that he's taken his chance.
Yeah, good for him. And look, we have to mention Eddie Nketiah as well. If Marquinhos ended with a goal and an assist, so too did Eddie Nketiah. In the middle of that, sandwiched in the middle of that, was, I think, a penalty, a somewhat unfortunate penalty. It's one of those where, you know, as a defender, in inverted commas, when you're defending your box and the ball comes across and you take a swipe at it, if the guy runs across you and you've got no idea he's there, it is a bit unfortunate. But, my rule of thumb with penalties is, like, what happens if that goes on in the other box? And if we don't get a penalty there, you know, I'm going to be...
How would you have felt?
I would have felt hard done by, Lewis, have to say. I think we definitely would have wanted a penalty if that challenge was on, you know...
He didn't get anything on the ball either. No. I think sometimes you see the defender swing a leg like that and they just hit the ball with their toes and they might get away with it. But because he got absolutely nothing on the ball as well, I saw a few people call it a striker's challenge. I do wonder if a centre back maybe has a little bit more awareness of danger, the risk that he's running if he does that in his own box.
Yeah.
And thankfully we can laugh about it a little bit now. I'm sure he won't like to look back.
No, I'm sure he won't. But like, he's involved. Yeah, he was doing it. Look, he was trying his best at the back, and that's obviously not where...
Ball's there in the box. It's bounced and you try and clear it.
Yeah, don't let it bounce. Blame the central defenders. If I'm Eddie Nketiah, I'm going in that dressing room talking to my central defenders, go, you don't let that bounce. That's your fault, not my fault. But look, he did provide the assist for Marquinhos, a good pass with his left foot. I thought he showed very good pace down the left-hand side, direct running. And I think his all-round game has improved a lot in the last 9 months, 12 months or so. I thought what was really interesting about the goal that he scored, we've talked about the quality of the cross from Marquinhos, which is very good. But I can remember a couple of instances last season where he had a similar kind of a chance, a headed chance from close range. There was one against Nottingham Forest in the FA Cup. There was one against Everton, I think, as well, which... I can't remember.
Right. I think we'd have gone 2-1 up.
We'd have gone 2-1 up. Instead, we lost. Yeah, we lost 2-1. And he wasn't convincing. So to see him, A, score the winner, make up for the penalty thing, really good. Good for him. But also to show an improvement on an area where, you know, last season he wasn't quite as clinical as he should be. Headed it down. Goalkeeper got a foot to it, but really couldn't do anything about it.
I think to take his own take on that as well, when he was on the Beautiful Game podcast, and he said, if I'm going on for 15 minutes and having two touches, what am I going to do? And he didn't think it was fair to judge him on some of those moments. And then he was like, well, but if I'm going to start 3 or 4 games in a row and I don't score a goal, then that's on me. And then you can judge me. And that was, both of those misses last season came at a time. I think the Forest game would have probably been his first start for about 2 months or something like that. Similar, the Everton one, he just hadn't been playing. And it was maybe been thrown 5 minutes, 10 minutes at the end of a game. And now he's getting regular football. Last season, obviously the last 7-8 games, we saw him playing all of them from the start. And now this season, even though he's not starting, he's getting off the bench for 20 minutes in pretty much every game in the Premier League. So I think take him at his own word and judge him a bit more fairly now that we're seeing more of him and that he can himself have a bit more rhythm, a bit more confidence. That run in the team did wonders for him, I thought, at the end of last season. We talked about it. I thought it was great at the end of last season. I think... obviously, didn't add maybe quite as much as Gabriel Jesus is at the moment. And I don't think you're looking at those two strikers thinking there's a competition for who's going to start most games up front in the league. But Eddie Nketiah has proved at the back end of last season, and hopefully he's proven again now, that he can be a really useful option off the bench in games when we need a goal, and he can be a really useful backup and someone to come in if you're going to maybe give Jesus a night off or anything like that. So, yeah, I think it's all-round games, you said, over the last... We always knew Eddie Nketiah would get on the end of things in the box and more often than not put chances away. It's dropping deep and playing with his back to goal, and it's the assist last night more than the goal for me, that this is the Eddie Nketiah that we've grown to get used to, I guess, over the past 6 months or so. And it's just really nice. It's really nice to see that development. I think it's a lesson for all of us as well, because I don't think there are many people that saw that coming, but that development can come. Not all players develop at 18, 19, 20, and then it's, you know, like Bukayo Saka now, and then you can see what level they're at 21, and that's it. Some players hit 23, and then it's that 6 months that they really start to kick on. Sure. And Nketiah looks a completely different player to 12 months ago, and it's really, really great for us.
The other side of this, of course, is that, like, when he signed a new contract, he must have done so knowing that Arsenal were going to sign a centre-forward, because Lacazette was leaving, Aubameyang had gone. He knew when he signed a new contract that Arsenal were going to sign a centre-forward, and maybe he knew it was Gabriel Jesus, or maybe he didn't. But in doing so, with full knowledge of that, he must have looked at these games, the Europa League group games, the EFL Cup games, as his, right? And so it's important for him, as he continues this development, to contribute in those games. Not just turn up, not just be the guy to give Gabriel Jesus a rest, but to do his best. And I think you're right. You know, there's no... It's not really a... There is a gap, but what I mean is that, you know, he can't just be content to play, you know, in his own mind, however realistic he might be, he can't be content to just say, well, I'm number two to Gabriel Jesus, because I think that's sort of that kind of mindset. I don't think Mikel Arteta would want that. I don't think, you know, the player himself would be satisfied with that. He has to push, as unrealistic as it might be. He has to go out every single time he gets a chance and say, this is what I can do. And in his first start, in his first Europa League game, he's turned up with a goal and an assist.
And we've just spoken about Marquinhos' debut, but we are still light on numbers in wide areas. And at some point, it wouldn't be a surprise at some point to see Gabriel Jesus line up on the wing, or maybe Eddie Nketiah to line up on the left, the way that Gabriel Martinelli's been playing at the start of the season. So I'm sure he's also looking at that and making himself an option. You know, nights like last night, reminding Mikel Arteta what he can do. Sure, he might not displace Gabriel Jesus, but that doesn't mean he won't be starting Premier League games at any point. From the left, from the right, move Jesus to the right or the left when somebody needs a rest, when we want to rotate, anything like that. I think there are still Premier League starts in this season for Eddie Nketiah, and not just when we're playing like something ridiculous, like four games in a week. And I really hope that he gets them, because, like I say, at the back end of last season, and again last night, and again when he's come off the bench recently, he's really, really impressed me.
Yep, same. And I think physically there's been a change as well, just in terms of how well he can deal with opposition defenders, and that might come with experience, but I do think he has developed a little bit there as well.
Even a bit of running ability as well. I don't know what to call it. I wouldn't call it speed necessarily, but the strength of his stride, if you like, almost. He gets the ball now, and with the assist last night, you see it from the halfway line. He gets the ball and he'll face a defender up and fancy himself to beat them in a race. And I don't think we saw a very penalty box orientated Eddie Nketiah before March last year, April last year. And this is something that, you know, back to goal and all of that stuff, that's something that he's really added to his game. And some of those chances he had last season, some of the goals he scored, you saw him cover huge distances and back himself in a race against the defender. So again, the assist, you know, we'd say the finish was on Marquinhos' weak foot. The pass to pick him out was really nice on Nketiah's left foot as well. A left-footed assist and a nice clinical headed goal is, I think, exactly what you want from your right footed striker.
Yeah. Yeah. Another close range classic from Eddie. But, you know, like you, I think it's interesting the way he's developed, particularly outside the penalty box and everything else. Just finally on this game, any worries or concerns about the substitutions? I saw people going, oh, they brought on Martin Odegaard, they brought on Saka, they brought on Gabriel Jesus. I can't remember who the other substitute was in that first run. But, you know, I think this is going to be the way of the world when it comes to the Europa League. It was Zinchenko, of course, who came on for Tierney. I mean, this is the way it's going to have to be if we're going to make changes in the Europa League, especially in games where it's not done and dusted. Like, I think Arsenal were dominant, but there were still moments when Zurich threatened. I remember Holding making a good block, Tierney making a good block. Towards the end, they brought on a fairly tall striker who gave us some problems in the air. So unless you're 4-0 up in a game like this and you're bringing on Matt Smith and you're bringing on, you know, these academy boys for a few minutes to give them a run out, the changes you're going to make are going to be, in inverted commas, first team players.
Yeah, I don't have I'd rather not see Bukayo Saka on a Thursday night.
Sure.
But I don't have a massive issue with it. And I think if he's travelled all the way out there, he's obviously trained with the team still. It's not like he's had days off. It's unlikely you know, that 15 minutes at the end of a game is going to be the thing that tips him over the edge and causes an injury. Sure. I think that's the same for all of them. I also think there's an element of psychology there. I think Mikel Arteta has obviously rotated the team, but he wants us to take every competition really seriously. And if he's not playing any of those players, you are sending some sort of message that it doesn't mean as much, that it isn't as serious. I think that ties into him picking such a strong team in the League Cup over the last couple of seasons since he became manager as well.
That's a Pep thing as well, though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't... Yeah, I don't think it's an accident at all that Guardiola obviously does that and that Arteta's doing it. They want to win every cup. They want to win every single competition, and the Europa League especially, you know, more than the League Cup. I would guess this is a competition that we can win, that before you know who drops down from the Champions League, we may be the favourites for at the moment. And I don't think it's enough to turn up for the quarterfinals and then tell the players that it's important and that you've got to take it seriously.
Yeah,
I think you've got to show them that you're taking it seriously from the beginning. And as you say, hopefully we get to match days 5 and 6 and we can afford to rest a few more players and not bring anybody on. But I don't have a huge issue with it. And I'm sure it wasn't just to bring Saka on and to bring Odegaard on, but also because Tierney and Vieira and Marquinhos haven't played full games themselves.
Sure.
And covering an entire 90 minutes probably wouldn't have been the wisest thing for any of them.
All right.
And, you know, if you do that and then you get Marquinhos and Vieira injured, then you end up having to play Odegaard and Saka from the start against PSV next week. So,
yeah. Yeah,
maybe
no,
there's
I know
a bit
what you
of
mean.
Managing that risk as
well.
Well,
of course. And I think that's a fair point about the importance of the tournament. And look, it might well be that PSV, well, it is going to be our next game, assuming that there are no restrictions on the Europa League games, just sort of moving on to what should be happening in the Premier League this weekend, but obviously isn't because of the passing of the Queen. The Premier League have decided that they're going to cancel all football, or the FA have decided to cancel all football. So that's Premier League, Football League, even kids football apparently has been cancelled in the UK over the course of this weekend. I'm curious as to what you think about that, because we've seen other sports are not going to postpone fixtures. Cricket, for example, and rugby is going to continue as normal. And I do wonder about the Premier League's decision, football's decision in this scenario. I think it's perfectly normal to be able to show respect to the passing of somebody who was beloved by many people in the UK, but also continue as normal. That part of showing respect is to do things that you would normally do. And I don't know, you know, they say it's a mark of respect to postpone the games. How do any of the people who would have gone to a game show their respect when they're sitting at home or they're gone somewhere else for the day. Like, you know, the idea of a minute silence or 2 minute silence in the stadium, black armbands, those kinds of things.
Maybe the national anthem plays or something.
Of course.
Possibly, yeah.
Of course. And I do feel like football has got this one slightly wrong. Like, it's absolutely right to respect that. But I think you have to take into account the other side of things. Like, what does it say? What does it mean to all the people who still have to go to work? You know, football is a big business. There are people coming from all over the world, not just to see Arsenal this weekend, but to see, you know, Premier League teams, people who've paid for flights, for hotels, for travel, for match tickets, all of those kinds of things. And like, I've had so many people today, messages and emails of people on our Discord, people on Twitter, etc., who are in exactly that situation. And when other sports are saying, we will show our respect by continuing on and showing that we're a community and all of that kind of stuff, it's hard not to think that football has got this one wrong.
Yeah, we've had this a lot over the last couple of years, haven't we? The British stiff upper lip of continuing on no matter what the circumstances are. Mm-hmm. And now this weekend, at least in football, we're not going to do that. It is a weird one. I think I wonder now, those other sports that you mentioned, I know there's horse racing that got postponed from Saturday to Sunday. Cricket wasn't played today on Friday, but it's going to resume on Saturday. The rugby union and rugby league are all going to be played over the weekend. But I think all of those, or almost all of those announcements, came after the Premier League and the FA, the EFL. And I wonder if anyone was sat there at Football HQ thinking, maybe we should have just played on if everybody else is going to do that. So I do find it a weird one. Football also has this difficult media PR relationship where the usual suspects in terms of the newspapers that none of us like to name or read. I'm sure if there was football going on, 80,000 people at Old Trafford or 60,000 at the Emirates celebrating wildly, that people would have rushed to write their columns. The people that write about Raheem Sterling buying a house for his mum or getting on an easy jet flight, even though he has all that money. I'm sure football would have been a very easy target. And I wonder if that was in anybody's minds, that criticism could have come for showing too many celebratory scenes over the course of the weekend. I don't think so. And I think if that had have happened, that obviously would have been ludicrous and not worth giving any oxygen to. But it did go through my mind earlier if that was in the decision-making process, just any concerns around that. I think it's a bit silly that football's not going on, especially when everything else is going on. Everything else is still open. As you said, people have to go to work.
Yeah.
Bars and restaurants and cinemas are staying open. Having a nice time and a community time isn't being banned.
Yeah, it's not being disrespectful, is it? You know, you can go to a concert on a Saturday night or this Saturday night, this Sunday, whatever it is. And by doing that, by enjoying yourself, by whatever, you're not showing any disrespect to anything, you know. And it's the same thing with football. And I just wonder, you know, I do feel like sometimes football, a bit like when the lockdown happened, when COVID happened, and all of a sudden you had politicians talking about, well, these footballers earning hundreds of thousands of pounds a week, they have to show some responsibility. They have to show some leadership because they earn all this money. What are they doing for the NHS? And it's like, well, hang on a fucking second here. Why should footballers be the ones who are held up as sort of these examples of rich, in inverted commas, rich people who don't do enough for society when you've got, you know, bankers and billionaires and investors and all these kinds of people? Nobody said, like, you know what, there's a pandemic on, the corporations who don't pay enough tax really should start to pay some tax now because that would help the NHS. Footballers are like a really easy target. It's a populist move to sort of blame footballers or point the finger of blame in the direction of footballers. And I just kind of wonder if something like that plays into this decision as well, that football is seen as something, I don't know if I want to use the words working class, and I think that's a sort of strange pejorative, but you know what I mean, that like it's it's seen as that you know, they're the ones who should show deference and who should take the knee or whatever it is, when in reality football could quite easily have continued. There could have been 10 Premier League games where all due deference and respect was shown to the passing of a monarch who was in place for 70 years. And obviously it's a fairly seismic event because the Queen was alive for basically most of all of our lifetimes. Anyone who's listening to this, you know, so I think people can understand that. But the idea that by celebrating a Gabriel Jesus goal when Arsenal, you know, play Everton on Sunday, you're somehow not sufficiently sad or mourning, I don't think that those two things are related, you know?
Well, yeah, and when a national state of mourning has been declared, how often do we talk about football? If you do want to go back to that thing of referring to it as the working people's game, how often do we talk about football as the thing that people work all week, and then it's the distraction from everyday life? It's the distraction from mourning, to take that example, obviously, in this situation. From all of the shit that's going on that makes people miserable, football's the thing you go to on a Saturday. And this community outreach program, essentially, for people who go to the stadium, 60,000 family members at the Emirates every weekend, if not by blood. So it's, yeah, to take that away from people this weekend, I think, is a strange choice. And even stranger choices, as you mentioned, the grassroots football being cancelled, and, you know, the 9-year-old kids who look forward to playing on a Sunday have their games called off. That's even more bizarre to me than the Premier League thing. I understand if there were, but I read that there weren't, that this didn't come into the equation. But I would have understood if concerns, especially around games in London and police presence, had come into the equation. Apparently it didn't. I am going to assume that Arsenal won't play next weekend as well because of that, because whenever a funeral is going to take place, you're going to have essentially every single state leader in the world all in London. I don't know if there'll be enough police to police.
And the crowds, obviously, who would go to a state funeral, as we've seen previously, you can understand why there would be concerns over policing levels for that kind of a weekend. But, you know, it's been made quite clear today that that was not part of the decision-making process. They decided, you know, like you say, to just not play.
And and I think with a little bit, I do wonder, with a little bit more distance, obviously this is, as you said, a seismic event. It's brand new to all of us. 70 years since anything remotely like this last happened, and the world was, I imagine, I didn't see it myself, unrecognizable 70 years ago to what it is today.
Even I wasn't there, so don't worry about it.
So there's no precedent, there's no protocol for this. And given that there's a good chance next weekend's games, or at least the ones in London, will be called off as well, or postponed, I guess I should say, I wonder if they'll look back and say that that postponing all of the games this weekend was a mistake. And especially, and maybe that's a secondary thought right now, but especially in this weird, condensed, broken up two halves season where we're already squeezing way too many games into not enough days. And now I think, like I say, I'm going out on a limb, but that's my assumption. We're going to have two extra Arsenal games to squeeze in somewhere in this mental calendar.
I saw someone say that the next possible date for any postponed games was sometime in January. So, you know, this is going to be post-World Cup and everything else. So look, I know that's not really that probably wasn't a consideration that they had, like, you know, when are we going to play these games? I think it was more about...
That's been a problematic recurring theme over the last 2.5 years. The welfare of the players has been everybody's last consideration at every single stop. And obviously they shouldn't take priority right now, maybe, the clubs and what football clubs want and what football fans want necessarily. But once again, I feel like that's been not even considered at all. And now we're going to end up in a position where all of the teams that are in Europe, at least, and I'm guessing, you know, you've got seven Premier League teams in Europe, so you're probably in any given weekend going to have the majority of Premier League fixtures involving a team or at least one team that is in Europe. It wouldn't be a problem, obviously, for Bournemouth and Wolves to squeeze an extra game in. They'll just do it in one of the European weeks. But for us and the teams that finished around us last season, it's a massive headache.
It could well be. All right. Well, look, we'll obviously pay attention to what's going on and whether or not football, Premier League football, will return next week. As you say, it's probably unlikely because of the timing of the funeral, but we don't know exactly as to when that's going to happen. I assume that European football will go ahead because I'm not sure how they could possibly squeeze in European games at a later point. They've got to get those done.
And I can't see UEFA saying that just the British teams, if you like, the English and Scottish teams, just they get to move their games. But, you know, they'll still have Zurich play Bodo Glimt in our group next week, and then us and PSV have to find another date. It wouldn't be fair on PSV either.
No, so. Of course not. You have to maintain some kind of sporting integrity for those competitions as well. So it is going to be a challenge for them. Right, we will see what happens. We'll leave it there for now, though. Lewis, have a great weekend, and we'll catch up with you soon.
You too, Andrew. Thanks a lot.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Thank you very much indeed to Lewis. You can find him on Twitter. He is at LG Ambrose, at LG Ambrose. Right, I'm going to leave it there for this week's show. Sorry it's a bit delayed, but better late than never, I guess they say. James and I will have an Arscast Extra for you over the coming days. Again, I'm not 100% sure exactly when that's going to be out. We were going to be doing it on Sunday after the Everton game, but that's obviously not taking place. So I'll check in with James and I'll let you know over the weekend on Twitter and on the site when we're going to do the Arscast Extra. So for now, have yourselves a good weekend. I'm going to go and take care of this little dog of mine and see if she can feel a bit better too. For now, though, thanks for listening as always, and we will catch you on the next one. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.